This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This show is brought to you by GoPays, providing accessible, affordable, and inclusive digital financial services, all in one app. Also, okay.
It is 7:07 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn. Welcome to the first episode of our five-part series on financial innovation and accessibility. So, with online banking and e-wallets being an everyday experience for many Malaysians, what we wanted to do with this is look at how accessibility to financial services has evolved to where it is today and how we use it now, and also to understand the road it took to get there. So this hour, we're kicking things off by looking at the history of banking in Malaysia, because we've come quite far from the days where banks were just, you know, an office with a strong room. In 2020, most neighbourhoods, malls and commercial areas will have at least one bank or an ATM. In some busier areas, you may find four different outlets occupying shop lots and even stories. But that, of course, wasn't always the case, especially in the earliest days of our country, or for that matter, before Malaysia became Malaysia. So for our first episode, we're focusing on the introduction of banks to our shores and what that looked like before future episodes will journey on towards where we find ourselves today. If you have any questions or if this is a topic that's always interested you, you know, financial accessibility or financial history even, you can let us know. Call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. We're now crossing over to Daryl Yap, author of The King's Chinese, which is a book about Yap Chor Yee, a successful businessman known for philanthropy in Penang before Malaya's independence. And Daryl's research has also included looking into the early days of banking in Penang and beyond. Daryl, welcome to the show. So our first question really is, how was money being managed or kept safe prior to the introduction of banks?
Okay, let's start at the point, because the first bank was introduced in the 1840s. So before that, Malaysia was a colony. So, and the bulk of the population were basically cash poor farmers, the laboring classes, and the migrant community. So how did they keep their money safe? They basically save it under the pillow or send the money back to their home country. And those who had money would basically use it to start their own small sundry business.
Mm. And so with that then, how did it change as banks were introduced?
Well, there were basically two phases when banks began to pop up in the colony. The first phase was around the 1830s to around 1880s, and these were basically the foreign branch of British or European owned institutions. They basically served the European community, and they were predominantly exchange banks, meaning that they were basically matching foreign receipts with foreign payment, because at that time, all countries in Southeast Asia, in this part of the world, they were using silver currencies as a form of exchange, meaning actual physical silver as a medium of exchange. You know, and they had in this part of the world, we had the Mexican dollar, the Spanish dollar, the American dollar, Hong Kong, Bolivian, Peruvian, and even Japanese. So it was really heavy to move these physical money around. So that's why they set up the exchange banks. And then the second phase was when the first locally incorporated banks began to appear. And these were introduced by mainly the Chinese community. And that was in 1903 that the first bank, the Kuang Yee Bank, came about. And that was set up by a man called Wong Ah Fook, and it was a Cantonese-oriented bank. And then subsequently, the other Chinese banks came along, banks like the Si Hai Tong Bank, the Chinese Commercial Bank, the Ho Hong Bank. And then Singapore became the de facto capital of the colony, and that started drawing in merchants and firms to Singapore because they wanted direct access to capital. you know, because capital was really scarce. In the past, before banks, there were each different communities were borrowing from within their own community. Like, you know, the Chinese would probably borrow from the secret societies. The Indians would borrow from through their there's a chettiar system where they the chettiars were a caste, an Indian caste of moneylenders. So they would borrow from their own communities. So when banks came along, when local banks came along, they were basically able to cater to the needs of the local community, local Chinese community.
And I suppose, you know, when did there even become a need for banking in Malaya or Malaysia?
So there were a number of events that basically spurred the development of local currencies. One was that when the colonies issued its own currency called the Straight Settlement Dollar. So that basically replaced all other currencies that was used as a medium of exchange. And then the second thing that basically helped develop local banks was there was a global market that was hungry for Malaysian commodities such as tin and rubber. And because of that, merchants and traders needed capital to expand. So therefore, banks were needed. Because suddenly Asia became, with the opening of the Suez Canal and all that, Asia suddenly became more commercially accessible to the West. And then the third other event was that there was a rapid population growth from migrants that were looking for work in Malaya. So that basically, you know, with a growing population, people needed to set up more shops, more infrastructure, and more housing. And I think the final one was where also because the British government decided to consolidate its political foothold. Because initially, the Straits Settlement, which comprised Singapore, Penang, and Malacca, were part of the colony. And subsequently, the Federated Malaya States came under the British rule of the British government. So when that happened, they started to inject new capital into infrastructure. So states like Penang, KL, Perak were undergoing a huge construction boom. So everyone needed capital to expand and grow.
On the line with us is Daryl Yap, author of The King's Chinese, and we're talking about the early days when banking was first introduced to Malaya. We're going to be continuing our conversation after this, but if you have any thoughts, anything you'd like to share, we're talking today about financial innovation, but we're starting it off by looking back to the beginning when financial services were introduced. You can, of course, call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Stay tuned for more insights on GoPays, a universal e-wallet, all in one app. Also, okay. We're back with more from GoPays, all in one app. Also, okay.
It's 7:16 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn. We're talking today in our first part, first episode of a five-part series on financial innovation and accessibility. So we're starting things off by looking at the history of banking here in our country. And continuing this conversation now is Daryl Yap, author of The King's Chinese. So Daryl, when we left off, we were talking about the need for banking. Following on from that, so how was it introduced? I mean, who do we credit even for bringing it here?
It was a natural transition for wealthy merchants to start a bank. For instance, farmers and the laboring classes would be buying from small shopkeepers on credit because at that time capital was quite scarce. And then in turn, these shopkeepers would buy their stocks from also on credit from wholesale merchants. So these merchants were basically financing this chain of finance. So it was a natural transition for wealthy merchants to progress into to start their lending business. And in the same way as how a number of the European banking houses in Europe started, like Barings and Roth Charles, they were in the cloth and silk trade. Jardine Matheson all traded initially in Chinese tea and opium. And Coote was originally a goldsmith shop. If you had money, you could open up a bank. There was no intervention. You didn't really need a license. You just needed money, and you could start your own bank.
And where was the first bank established, and what did the first iteration of the bank even look like?
The first bank was established in Singapore, but the idea of a bank initially started in Penang. That was in around the 1830s, but that fell through. So then there were a few other instances where they tried to set up a bank, but it was only in 1840 that the first bank came about, and that was based in Singapore. And the first purpose-built foreign bank were buildings like the ones in Penang of Standard Chartered and the Hong Kong Shanghai Bank, and also the Dutch bank called that was previously called ABN AMRO. But the first purpose-built local bank was probably Ban Hing Li in Penang, and that was built in the 1930s.
And could you give us a glimpse into what Malayans at the time would have experienced when they went for an appointment at the bank?
Well, before the purpose-built bank buildings, they were basically going into shop lot houses. These were basically the the standard bank. So, which had, you know, long, dark, narrow passages and, you know, just like a typical shop lot environment. So basically, when Ban Hing Li's new headquarters opened in the 1930s, it provided locals the first banking experience. So instead of the long, dark, narrow shop house environment, they would enter into a proper banking hall greeted by a security guard or a doorman. And then the building had high ceilings and marble flooring, so it's quite a grand entrance. And instead of a desk, the banking hall had long wooden teller counters to fit more staff, so that banking transactions became a lot speedier. And also the building had a vault the size of a room. So that was the first time that locals could actually keep their valuables safe in a proper vault.
And did locals take well to the concept of banking?
Yes, very well, because between the turn of the 20th century, between when Guang Yu started, right up to just before Merdeka, there were about at least close to 20 local banks that were introduced. So obviously there was a huge demand for banking.
And how did the banks go about establishing trust with people?
Okay, one of the major risks for a bank is to be faced with a bank run. That is when depositors start to withdraw money from the bank. So back then, because there were no government to back a bank, or there were no institution like a central bank to regulate their activities, bankers basically had to show that they were financially sound, either through, you know, you have a syndicate of shareholders which were wealthy. That was one way. And then in the case of Ban Hing Li, because it was a sole proprietorship, because there was only one shareholder, what the owner did was that he had two godowns that were packed full of tin slabs. And that basically gave a deep sense of security to depositors. Because, you know, if you're backed by, if the owner has two large godowns of that were stocked by with tin slabs, that gave a lot of security to depositors. So it was a way to determine the solidity of the bank.
And at the beginning, were there groups or maybe segments of society that might have been left behind by this whole introduction?
Yes. when the Europeans introduced the banks, they were only mainly catered to the European community. And then when the Chinese opened up their banks at the turn of the 20th century, they too catered to mostly towards the Chinese community. And even within the Chinese community, they were dialect groups. So the banks were catered towards their own dialect group. And one of the reasons why this was so was because there were no company laws and no registration of companies. So if a creditor were to lend money to an entity, it was very difficult to trace their identity. So that's why, you know, banks tend to only cater towards their own community.
So beyond that, how did banking develop in the early days?
Well, first, they basically coordinated amongst themselves. They would have, for instance, the Chinese banks would come together every month and conduct their monthly meetings, and they would determine how much interest rate to charge per customer. They would talk about the risk profiles of their customers. So they basically coordinated amongst themselves on what they should charge per customer and who to avoid and that sort of thing. Then it was only after the Great Depression, the 1930s, that a number of these banks, so-called banks, which were initially subsidiary arms of their mercantile business, that evolved to become a standalone business enterprise. So, for instance, Ban Heng Lee started off as a trading house, and then it started a financing arm, which then became a bank on its own. And then with more banks and more capital, that basically enabled the local economy to expand. And by then also in the 1930s, European banks started to employ, because initially they were only catering towards themselves, towards their own community. So when, you know, when the economy started to develop, they saw that the Chinese banks were basically competing against them. So they started to employ the services of a comprador, which was basically a middleman, to act as a go-between between them and the local business community. And also by then, in the 1930s, I think the Indians also saw the need for a more formal form of financing. So they started their first bank called the Indian Overseas Bank, which was to help the Penang to develop trade between India, Burma, and Ceylon.
And Daryl, last question. You know, from there, what was the next big change? And at what point did banking start becoming more available or accessible to the wider public?
So what was the next big change? It was basically after independence, after Merdeka, that the banking sector saw a big change, because company laws were introduced, and also the establishment of a central bank in 1959. So that basically changed the way banks could operate. In the past, because there were no regulations, there were a lot of dubious practices, like directors lending to themselves, which created a lot of problem when the economy went bust. So when it was after Merdeka that things began to change, because laws were introduced in the countries, company registration, it was also compulsory for people to register the birth. So that meant that banks could trace the identity of a creditor a lot easier than previously. And then after that, you know, banks like, I think it was Malayan Banking and the UMBC, the United Malayan Banking Corporation, that was established in the 1960s to cater towards the indigenous community.
Daryl, thank you so much for joining us this evening. That was Daryl Yap, author of The King's Chinese, giving us a history, really, of how it is that banking and banks first arrived in Malaya. And so this is just the first episode on our five-part series on financial innovation and accessibility. Next week, same time, same place, Friday at 7, we are going to be exploring the evolution of banking services. So moving on to looking at things like checkbooks, bank books, ATMs, how they affected accessibility for people. So that is going to be coming up next week. And, you know, do follow along. And if you're interested in how it is that our financial services came to be at the level they are at today.
This show has been brought to you by GoPays. All in one app. All are so okay.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.